7 o'clock. So I'm going to introduce our speaker. So welcome everyone. Our speaker tonight is Dr. Jean Ira Katz. He is a licensed sex therapist, a licensed professional counselor. He does addictions. He's got all kinds of areas that he is happy to engage. But importantly to us, he is very understanding of our register, the struggles of related to the registry. And he's published lots of articles about us, and I've referred people to him many times. I think he's been on the War Room 3 or 4 times. And tonight he's going to talk about something that I honestly don't really even understand. Something about I was like, oh, I'm going to really learn some things tonight. The case for considering compulsive sexual behaviors in porn viewing as process addiction disorders. I had to ask my boyfriend, what is a process addiction disorder? And he knew, but Dr. Jean is going to tell us all about it. So take it away, Dr. Jean.
Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for showing up. Also, I'm not sure, am I able to use the share? I mean
Yes, I can make that happen.
the chat part.
Yeah, it's already activated.
Chat.
And everyone can talk to everyone.
Yeah, talk to everyone
And you can also share like your screen.
I can share the screen. I can also add things because I have information I'll put on the chat so
Excellent.
then you can
Yeah.
download it. In fact, let me, before I start talking about myself and stuff, nope, it's not letting me access my computer on the chat. I mean, on the share. I mean, hang
Oh,
on.
I clicked it to be
On
who
the
can
chat.
share all participants.
Not share, but the chat one, the one with two little people.
Yeah, I don't think you can share files in there, but you can share a URL to a file.
Okay. All right. All right. I'll work around it then. That's okay.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for showing up. I'll tell you a little bit more about myself and everything else. And I have a bunch of stuff to share with you. So let me see. I'm hitting share. And are you seeing this?
Not yet.
I don't know why. I hit share.
Yeah, you hit share and then you pick the window you want to share.
Yeah. No, I'm well familiar. Oh, it says who can share? All participants. Okay. And I'm clicking on sharing and I'm not actually seeing the slides I want to show you.
Yeah, you have to have them already open in a window.
Yeah, it's open. It's open in the window. It's right in front of me. Hitting
You
share. I'm hitting the window. Oh, hang on. There we go. Anyone with the link can edit. No, I don't want anybody to be able to edit. It says send link. That's wrong.
So for
I
me,
should.
I click on the green share button right in the middle, and then
Yes, that's what I'm doing.
I open windows and I scroll through them and I pick one that I want to share.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing, but it's not showing up.
Huh.
It says all participants can share. Am I the host now?
Yeah, you're a host, so you have
Oh.
controls.
Okay.
But you're clicking on the little up arrow, and that's where it has all participants can share. You don't want to click there. You want to click in the middle of the green button to the left of the up arrow.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing exactly that.
And you don't get
I
a window full of all your other windows.
well, I'm seeing the window that I want to share, but it's not. All right, hang on. Here we go.
That's weird.
Are you seeing this now?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. So I gotta tell you that I do this all the time and I don't know what's going on here.
Well, how annoying.
Yeah, this would not be good without you being able to see my slideshow. Let me see
Hey,
again.
you want to maybe send me your slideshow and see if I can share it?
No, that's not gonna work for me because I have to be in control of it.
Yeah. So when you click the green share
Well,
button,
are you seeing that now? You seeing
no.
it now?
Oh.
You're still not seeing. You're still not seeing my title slide.
No. Nope. I'm going to attempt to share a window just as a quick
Okay.
test here. See what happens. Do you see my test?
Yes.
I do.
Okay. So I'm going to now stop sharing.
So we know it's not Zoom's problem.
Right. And Gene is set. He is a co-host, so he'll have full permission to change the settings and share. Oh, there it comes.
Yep, there we go.
Okay,
There we go.
see it now.
Well, is it taking up the whole screen for you guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Sorry for that. We should be okay going forward. Whoops, that's not good.
Oh, that was actually better, but then it went away.
This is driving me a little nuts. So, can you see it?
Now we can see it.
Yeah, it's a little smaller now, but yeah, we can see
Yeah.
it.
Well, I don't want it smaller. I want it bigger.
Right, you had it there for a moment. You had it full screen, and we didn't see your border and stuff.
Yeah, that's not okay. Oh, this
Oh,
is the wrong one.
see both the slide and the thing at the side. Now it all went away.
Please bear with me, folks. I don't know really why I'm having a hard time with this.
No worries at
Like I
all.
said, I do this all the time. Is it built up again?
Nope, it's gone. This is
Boy.
so weird.
Okay, it's starting up, it says.
Okay, now we can see a tiny version of
Yes,
your thing on the left, but then we can see your whole
desktop.
desktop.
You can see my whole desktop.
Yeah, you showed us your whole desktop there.
Right, something ain't right here. I actually do know what I'm doing, so all right.
I am not doubting that.
Try it one more time.
Things are annoying. Technology is a pain sometimes.
Starting up, it says, okay, we see your screen and we see the home insert draw design stuff at the top. Oh, now it's full screen. Full
Sorry.
screen, good.
Sorry, folks.
We don't see any controls now, just the screens.
Good.
I'm gonna mute.
Okay. Good evening. I am Dr. Jean Ira Katz. I will tell you about my qualifications in a moment. Clearly, for some reason this PowerPoint isn't on the top of my list today. This evening, I'm going to discuss obsessive sexual behavior and pornography viewing as addictions. This is a hotly debated subject in my world, and for some reason, here in the United States, we're having problems with diagnosing this as a process addiction, and I'll get into the deep weeds about that. Hello. So I am the executive director of Positive Pathways Institute, which is a consultation and counseling organization. I could tell you more about that if you're interested later on. I am a licensed addictions counselor. I'm a licensed professional counselor, as well as an ABS board certified sex therapist, member of the American Board of Sexology. I was an associate professor at Colorado Tech University from 2011 to 2024, and I actually developed a course called Sex Crimes, Behavior, and Consequences, the first course of its kind in the United States. And I am still currently an instructor at the Colorado School for Family Therapy, where I also do the certification classes for those who are becoming sex therapists. I hold a doctorate of management in criminal justice, and I can tell you more about that a little bit later. I do hold a master's in psychology counseling, and I'm a contributing writer for Behavioral Health News, American Police Beat, the International Journal of Health, of Nursing and Health Studies, and there's more I could tell you about. I'm a very prolific writer, so there's that. Okay. Hang in there with me. No, this other little thing in the way. Okay. So now the World Health Organization, it classifies compulsive sexual behavior as a mental health disorder. And the ICD-11, so that's the International Classification of Diseases, compulsive sexual behavior disorder, and there's its nomenclature there, at last offers a formal diagnosis for inability to control sexual behavior despite negative consequences. The world's health experts have agreed that compulsive sexual behavior disorder merits a diagnosis. CSBD is also known as sexual addiction or hypersexuality. Now, the ICD-11 is used by the rest of the world. Almost all the nations in the world use the ICD as the classification for diseases, both physical diseases and mental behavioral diseases or conditions. Now, in the US, we use the DSM-5 TR, which is a text revised. And the DSM-5 recognizes gambling as the only process addiction. That's it. Not shopaholic isn't in there. And we can go on and on. Gaming addiction, which is also in the ICD-11, you know, people who are hooked on their phones. So process addiction refers to behavioral problems that involve a lessening of control, persistent seeking, and significant harm, even though no addictive substance is involved. Now, we could go through this whole presentation and talk about neurotransmitters as substances. Now, those are naturally occurring substances that are squirted out by your brain and other hormonal organs. such as serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, et cetera, et cetera. So there are substances involved, but these are naturally occurring substances, dopamine and oxytocin in particular, when we're talking about compulsive sexual behavior. We get to talk a little bit about paraphilic disorders, which are in the DSM-5-TR, and we're going to talk about that quite a bit toward the end of this slideshow. So there's a group, they're grouped. Notice on the left-hand side there are these groups. There's voyeuristic, fetishistic, exhibitionistic, frauderistic, sexual masochism, sexual sadism, transvestic, hedophilic, and other. So voyeuristic is observing an unsuspecting person naked, disrobing, or engaged in sex. Talk more about that a little bit later. Fetishistic, arousal to non-living objects or specific non-sexual parts of the body. People getting turned on by earlobes, whatever. Exhibitionistic, exposure of one's genitals to an unsuspecting stranger. Frauderistic, touching or rubbing against a non-consenting person. People who have been diagnosed with frauderism love it on the subway rush hour in New York City because they can get away with all kinds of rubbing on people. Sexual masochism, deriving sexual excitement from being humiliated, beaten, bound, or otherwise made to suffer. Sexual sadism, urges or fantasies or of acts in which psychological and/or physical suffering of the victim is sexually exciting. Transvestic urges and fantasies involving cross-dressing, and that's a subject matter that really needs a new definition, given all the changes in our society. Pedophilic urges and fantasies involving sexual activity with prepubescent children ages 13 and below, and other telephone scatologicals, people calling up and making dirty phone calls. Necrophilia, that is enjoying sex with dead bodies. Zoophilia, enjoying sex with animals, and urophilia and coprophilia and other kinds of working with bodily fluids in order to get off. So that's just a kind of overview of paraphilic disorders. We're going to get into some details about that later on, and you'll see why as we get there. By the way, if anybody has any questions or concerns, just shout them out. You can interrupt me anytime. I think, is that available for everybody to be able to do that? So the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, which is a very liberal organization, I happen to be a member, does not find sufficient empirical evidence to support the classification of sex or porn addiction as a mental health disorder, and does not, and let's say mental behavioral health disorder, and does not find the sexual addiction training, treatment methods, and education to be adequately informed by accurate human sexuality knowledge. And that part I will absolutely agree with. Treatment methods, training, education, not adequately informed. Therefore, it is the position of ASAC that linking problems related to sexual urges, thoughts, or behaviors to porn sexual addiction process cannot be advanced by ASAC as a standard of practice for sexuality education, delivery, counseling, or therapy. Now, those are two really important parts and why I'm doing this presentation. So here's one of the foremost forward-looking organizations in our country that deals with sexuality issues, and it does not support a standard of practice for sexuality education, delivery, counseling, or therapy. Now, SASH, of which I am also a member, the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health, has a different point of view. Having reviewed the available evidence, SASH is clear that there are several diagnostic models currently proposed, both formally and informally, and under investigation, all of which reflect an underlying clinical condition requiring dedicated assessment and treatment. Sexual addiction and pornography addiction are two such models. Additional models include hypersexual disorder, out of control sexual behavior, unspecified impulse control disorder, and sexual compulsivity, among others. A growing body of empirical research supports the serious clinical concerns on which these various models seek intervention. And among this empirical evidence are dozens of studies supplying neuroscience evidence consistent with the presence of addiction, primarily in internet pornography users, but also in sex addicts in general. There's research evidence also supporting other diagnostic labels, such as hypersexual disorder, and that's from SASH. So you can see, and SASH is also a very forward-looking organization. So Sash and ASAC are kind of on opposite ends of the poles here. So again, questions, concerns, anybody want to jump in with observations
So
about
this is two different organizations, and they're
two totally different organizations?
the first one is saying they don't find evidence to do this, and the second one, for some reason, I was thinking we were talking about the same organization,
Two
is the
different
second one
organizations.
saying a growing body of evidence. That is a lot of words. So are they saying, are they with you, or are they with ASECT?
Stay with me.
They're with
Sash
you.
is with me. ASEC is not. In
Okay.
fact, ASEC, ACE, I've done presentations at ASEC conferences. They would not allow me to do this presentation. They
Wow.
are against what I am presenting here tonight. Okay. Whereas
And you
Sash,
said that ASECT was very forward thinking and,
it is.
positive. What about SASH? Is it less forward thinking?
Sash is actually a little bit more academia oriented than ASEC. ASEC, if you go to the two conferences, you see ASEC is a way more kind of wild and crazy place, where people like have dildo displays and other very interesting things. Sash is more kind of academic in a sense. I see
Okay.
that somebody named John S. has a raised hand. I don't know if I can allow John S. to speak, but
I can.
thank you.
How come I don't see John on my list? Oh, there he is. Okay. All right, John, ask a question.
Dr. Katz, we have talked before. I'm John from Arkansas.
Oh, hi there, John.
Yeah, you partly answered the question that I'm going to ask, but let me go on ahead. You just said the word academic. For a lot of people in positions of lawmaking, perhaps even law enforcement, academic is going to be something of a turnoff for them.
Yeah, sure.
You
Sure.
also have you also list here about the empirical research, the dozens of studies and so on.
Yes.
They're
Yes.
academic, they're professional in nature. Do you also have, for reference purposes, these results that are published in a more plain spoken language that people who are lawmakers, that people who are looking into reforms could use to argue for reforms, to argue in favor of having these paraphilias that you've been talking about clearly
Yes.
and permanently professionally recognized?
Well, the article I wrote, for instance, for Behavioral Health News, which I was trying to link and send you the link through this, and I'll give it to you before the presentation is over. That is one such article, of the kind of articles you're talking about. The academic and scientific evidence-based articles are usually pretty wordy. It's usually, at a doctoral level of
Right,
writing.
right.
You're talking about dissertations, such as the dissertation that I presented myself about the problems with, there's hardly any evidence-based practice whatsoever in the correctional approach to, quote, sex therapy counseling, unquote. There is some evidence-based practice, but it's a wash when it comes to using things like the plethysmograph and polygraphs and et cetera, which are not evidence-based. So,
Right.
but see, the problem is when you go to the legislature, you need people like me to sit before committees and speak in plain language, because they're not going to sit and read through these very academic, weighty articles. They just won't
Which
do
is
it.
what I'm asking. I'm
Yeah.
talking about having something maybe along the lines of something they might read in Psychology Today or something else, if you will, for the popular market.
Yeah, indeed. Again, the link I'm going to send you later for my article from Behavioral Health News is exactly that kind of thing. It's
Good.
plain spoken. It's for, the average reading public, people that don't necessarily have the scientific degrees or understand, evidence-based terminology and all that kind of thing. So yes, absolutely. I believe there's a growing body of work out there, especially from countries that do use the ICD, which is not America. We don't use that at all. ICD has no standing in the United States. On the other hand, the DSM is not used in but one or two other countries beside the US. Rest of the world uses the ICD.
So
So,
everybody else all agrees to use the IC whatever, and
yes.
only just a couple of countries refuse to use it, and the US is one of those.
Yes, we don't use the ICD. We
And
have
what was
the,
our what's our excuse for not using it if the rest of the world
well,
uses it?
it's the American Psychiatric Association. They're not going to let the World Health Organization take their thunder. So
Therefore.
the American Psychiatric Association is in charge of the official diagnoses in the United States, period. Okay, so all of those F codes, anybody who's been to see a counselor and you're getting reimbursed by insurance and et cetera, there's going to be F codes on there. Those are all from the DSM. If you don't have an F code, they don't take your money and we don't get paid. So it has to be an F code in there. And that is from the DSM, period. Now, some places use the ICD codes, but only for descriptive purposes, but it's not the official, it's not an official diagnosis in the United States. They don't use them. So, for instance, there is an official diagnosis for compulsive sexual behavior. I mentioned it before. Compulsive sexual behavior disorder is an official diagnosis in the rest of the world, not in the US. So, and I hope, the implications of that, I hope you're thinking it through. Well, this is why I'm doing this presentation. There's like, well, why wouldn't we? Well, just think about it. Who stands to gain by not having it as a diagnosis? And we'll talk about that,
Who
I'm
does
sure.
stand to gain?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll get to that as we get closer to the end of the presentation. So, for some context here, pornography has been around as long as humans have created art. The word pornography is derived from the Greek porne, from prostitute, and graphein, to write. It was originally defined as any work of art or literature depicting the life of prostitutes. In America, pornography was outlawed from 1873 to 1957. That's the whole country. It was outlawed. Under the Comstock Act, prior obscenity was only regulated on a state by state level since 1815. Roth versus the US in 1957 redefined obscenity, and pretty soon, porn became accessible legally, except for pornography depicting children, which is still illegal. And since then, the pornography business has flourished. And this is kind of a timeline from on the upper left, some of these are from temples in India that go back thousands of years and have rock carvings of sexual activity, wall paintings in Roman baths, and Chinese or Japanese, like linoleum block cuts that were then printed, and also Chinese ivory figures. So it goes back a long time in human history. It's certainly not something new. Famously, in the middle left here, we have the French postcards, which became very popular worldwide, and certainly were distributed here in the U.S. as well, in about the 1920s, 1930s. Followed not long after by what we call the Tijuana Bibles, which were little comic books using popular comic characters like Blondie and Popeye, and Betty Boop was very famous in those. And you can imagine, I showed nothing explicit here except the possibility of the Indian temple carving, which were, by the way, considered sacred relics, I might add. That's a whole other discussion. We could do a whole presentation just on that. So, got one shot in there of Betty Page, who kind of broke the mold in terms of cheap magazine modeling. There was nobody like Betty Page. She was like the, in a sense, the Marilyn Monroe of her era, in that she depicted some very risque behaviors, and her magazines were definitely underground material at the time. Then came the era, so in the 50s or so, 8 millimeter, regular 8 millimeter films became proliferant here in the United States. And so, but anybody with a camera, with an 8 millimeter camera, could take any kinds of movies they wanted to. And there was an underground trade in dirty films, pornographic material that people could show on their home projectors. Shortly after that, maybe 20, 30 years. Did somebody have a comment? I thought I heard somebody say something there.
There are some comments on the side, but
Well, I'm not reading comments on the side, so if you want to
that's all
talk to
right.
me, please jump right in. And then, of course, with the popularity of the VHS videotapes, boom. Now, you'll notice from the Betty Page image down, we have a photoplay, which was pretty mild. Pinups was a little more risque. And then all of a sudden, you had Playboy. Playboy was a breakthrough in that you had something, literally you could buy in a newsstand that was, for its day, extremely risque. In fact, the FBI tried to slap judgments against mailing Playboy through the US mails, and it was a huge to-do about that. But come around the 1970s or so, with Hustler and all of its similar, very, what did they call them? Call them beaver magazines, showing pubic hair, et cetera, which Playboy didn't. Playboy was kind of airbrushed. And then you had a proliferation of all these kinds of, for a long time they were called nudie magazines, but they became increasingly sexual in nature, not just beautiful women being shown in a certain light, but anything and everything. So that's a very condensed history of pornography coming up into these days. However proliferate porn became from the 1950s to the 1990s, it pales in comparison today. And some of these numbers are a few years old. The slideshow is a few years old. In the United States, 66% of men, 41% of women are estimated to consume pornography on a monthly basis. An estimated 50% of all internet traffic is related to sex. Pornography is a mass phenomenon that influences our society. I might add here that I do have an asterisk. These images of young girls, these are simulated. These were actually taken from a swimsuit magazine. So I just want to be very clear, there's nothing here illegal. So on the left-hand side, you see just an example of streams and streams and streams of sites that you can look up. If somebody wants to punch up pornography on their computer, if you're able to, if you're not legally barred from doing so, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds worldwide. You see the map of the United States shows the proliferation of which are the most popular imagery that is being downloaded today by your friends and neighbors across the US.
Hey, Gene, it seemed to be referring to things like a map that you haven't changed the slide. Is it possible that you're on a different slide than we are on? Because we're still
So,
seeing that same list of all the pornography, the history of pornography.
really? I went to the next slide, so I'm not sure.
That is very weird. Is everybody else on his slide and it's just me?
I see the one with the Playboy and Hustler in the middle and a VHS machine at the bottom.
Well, that's weird because I'm in a whole other slide here.
That is very weird.
Let me stop sharing and reshare, okay?
Sounds good.
I don't know why I'm having trouble with share. You do this stuff all the time.
It's starting up. Okay, now we see the one with every second in the middle of the text box.
Okay, all right. So that's the one I'm talking about. And these are the, keep in mind, these are simulated images of these young girls. These are not nude images. They're in swimsuits, but they're made to look like what some of these websites look like. So, and notice on the left-hand side, you see lists. You can go for hours looking at lists and lists and lists and lists of different sites around the world. Okay, and I won't repeat the numbers on the top, but let me go over the box on the right-hand side, and the map in the middle of the page gives you an idea of what are the most popular searches going on in the United States. About 200,000 Americans may be classified as porn addicts. 40 million Americans regularly visit porn sites. 35% of all internet downloads are related to pornography. One-third of porn viewers are women. Every second, 37 pornographic videos are created in the United States. 2.5 billion emails containing porn are sent or received. 60 million search queries related to pornography, 25% of total searches on the web.
Wow.
And 116,000 queries related to child pornography are received. And this was from a few years ago. It has only spread since then.
How are d
But,
people like everyone knows that child porn is illegal. So, right?
yeah, I
I
would
mean,
imagine everybody knows
it's
it's illegal.
impossible not to know that.
Yeah.
How are 16,000 queries, how is that not 16,000 people that get arrested?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I don't know if you have you had any discussion here on the torrent? Has the war room discussed the torrent? Do you know what the torrent is? Does anybody here know what the torrent is? Does that ring a bell?
No.
Torrent, like a torrent of rain.
Okay.
First of all, yes, child pornography is illegal. So is heroin. So is drag racing on a deserted highway in the middle of the night on a U.S. highway. I mean, people do things that are illegal all the time.
Is it
And
because they're using like VPNs and things to protect themselves from their
not
searches?
everybody, not hence the torrent. So the torrent, if you all don't know about this, you should know that the U.S. Department of Justice offers a program to all law enforcement agencies who request it. And basically, the torrent is attached to quite a number of kiddie porn sites.
Quite a bit of
And
what?
kiddie porn, child porn, okay? The torrent is attached to child porn sites. It doesn't create child porn sites. It just is attached to them. And anybody who goes into any one of those sites that's attached to the torrent can expect to get a knock on the door.
So this is, I think we have heard Bonnie Burkhart talk about how the cops can like the cops know what all the underage porn looks like, and they can see it kind of whizzing past on the internet. Is that what a torrent is?
No, the torrent will actually ding who's ever using it. Just like other websites keep track of who's on there. Amazon keeps track of what you buy and all those. It's a tracer program. It can tell who's on the site. So if you're asking a question of everybody knows that child porn is illegal, so why would they go looking for it? Well, that's what we're talking about here. Some people are compelled. Some people have a disorder. And they're going to go for it no matter whether it's illegal or not. Just as some people are going to go for heroin or fentanyl. They're going to do it willingly and knowingly. They're going to go after it because there's a disorder going on. See, that's the heart and soul of this presentation, is that we're not just dealing with questionable illegal activity. We're talking about a mental health disorder, mental behavioral health disorder, where people are compelled to behave in such ways that are, well, compelled. Compulsions, that whole idea of behaving in ways that are maybe detrimental to one's well-being. So, we could have a whole other discussion about how there are cultures where people get married at 13. It's perfectly legal. And that would be, a whole other presentation for another time. In this culture, there is kind of a strange, weird, twisted double standard where you'll have a show like Toddlers and Tiaras. And Dance Moms, which are clearly pre-errant. If anybody wants to argue with me about that, I'll be glad to have that discussion. They're not quite pornography, but they're clearly child exploitation. And it's not illegal to watch these shows, but who's the audience? You think this is Dance Moms watching Dance Mom shows? Why do we have beauty pageants with little girls 3, 4, 5 years old with makeup and lipstick and spangles? And we can go on and on about that. Has anybody seen the biographical documentary on Brooke Shields? I might want to take a look at that sometime. There's an issue in our society, and it goes hand in glove with why we don't have an official disorder about these issues that I'm talking about today. And I'll get further into that as we go along. Further questions about this slide? Are we seeing the next slide? Hook up back.
Yes.
Okay. So there are currently some 1,500 dating sites, and this was 3 years ago, and I'm sure there's way more. And apps with just under 60 million users, and that's got to be more. By now, I'd probably say 100 million. And it's been growing steadily. Notice the bar graph from 2021 to 23. Now we're 2 years further on. You got to figure those bars are going up. I can't tell you how many couples that I've worked with, because I work with a lot of couples as well as individuals who met on apps. It seems this is the modern way that people meet. They meet on apps. Okay. Now, some apps are actually for people who are looking for a partner. Most apps are hookup apps. They're just Grindr is a famous one. That's a gay app. It's just for hookups. That's what it is. How about this one? Plenty of Fish. How's that for a name for now? And this is I could have filled this whole slideshow with dating apps, but this is a way that I'm 75. I was raised in a whole different era. World War II was just 5 years ahead of me when I was born. It was a whole different world. The idea of somebody having a device in their pocket that they could pick up, hit it with their finger a couple of times and meet a total stranger is willing to go hook up with them, would be science fiction. But this is the modern world. And I can't say this is how most people are hooking up, but there certainly are millions of people hooking. And if my clientele is any indication, it seems to be that this is the normal way that people get together. I don't know what you all think about that. I'd be curious to hear. Are you seeing the next slide now?
Yes.
Are sexual fantasies okay? Because really, the heart of this presentation isn't just all this prurient stuff. I am a psychotherapist. I try to help people who are working with the problems that they're dealing with. And one of the problems is compulsive behaviors. Okay. So are sexual fantasies okay? Or is that a behavioral problem? Is it a temporary escape from reality? Why not? Play dress up? Sure. For an outlet to express and explore taboo desires? To plan out or rehearse future sexual encounters, which people are doing more and more, as far as I understand from my research. For relaxation and/or to cope with anxiety, those things are not considered, even by the ICD, they're not considered compulsive sexual behavior disorders unless they're obsessive, dangerous, and interferes with real life. And I made that call to call it real life. Like, what's the normal way that people, quote, should, unquote, behave sexually? Well, I mean, I don't think there's just one way. There are people probably still in this day and age who think that if it's not the missionary position, there's something wrong. But there are problems with stuff like voyeurism. That's the practice of gaining sexual pleasure from watching others when they are nude or engaged in sexual activity. It's generally surreptitious. It's generally things like peepholes, telescopes. I have worked with one client who he knew certain neighbors in his area that if he took his dog for a walk around a certain time of night, they're going to be doing it and he's going to be able to look through their window. And eventually he came to realize that that was a problem, and that's why he called me. He wanted to, rein it in. He wanted to do something about this kind of compulsive viewing behavior. Okay. In many states, in many localities, it's illegal to do that. You can't look in on people while they're having sex in the privacy of their home. And it can lead to winding up on the registry. Obsessive public masturbation, touching oneself, touching the genitals, the sexual gratification when you know or should know there are other people present who would be offended by it. And there are plenty of laws out there against public masturbation of any kind, even if somebody has a hole in their pocket, and certainly not just doing it openly. It's against the rules. Upskirting and invasive photography. I don't know how many people know about this. Well, I knew nothing about it until I had one client who had just been busted for upskirting up on University Hill. A covert type of sexual voyeurism and abuse by using a camera or mobile phone to take photos or videos underneath a person's clothing with the intention of viewing their genitals or buttocks without their permission. It's usually undetected. Several states, I believe it's up to four now, have this as a felony. I believe it's still a misdemeanor here in Colorado, but it's highly frowned upon. And the client who came to me had already been busted for it and was looking at, some serious fines and having a record, even if it wasn't a felony, let alone the ethical implications of this kind of behavior. So that's what this page is about. Is a sexual fantasy is okay? Yeah, I'm a sex therapist. I have nothing against sexual fantasies. I don't think, well, you're weird because you think you want to dress up like a marine and you want to rescue somebody from a burning building. I don't, whatever a person's fantasies may be. But if it crosses a line into impinging on somebody else's privacy or their rights, or forcing somebody else to watch your behavior that you want to force them to watch, then we have an issue. But the point of having the slide on here is that some people are compelled, and putting this in quotes, they can't help themselves. They're compelled to do this. It's their main release. It's their main sense of sexual gratification is to do these kinds of behaviors. And by the way, upskirting is a growing problem in the country. I believe four states have it as a felony now. And that's grown since I first heard of it. Any questions, comments?
I mean, there
All
are
right,
some
let's talk.
comments
Go ahead.
in the,
Go
there are
ahead.
comments in the chat, but I don't, I would think that if you've said many times, hey, if you want to talk to me, say it out loud.
Yeah, I'm not looking at the chat. Jim Z
Yeah,
has a hand raised.
I think we'll come back to the chat
Okay.
in a minute. That's my
Yeah,
philosophy. If
I'm
anybody
almost
wants
through.
to say it now, just raise your hand. If you want to say the thing you're typing in the chat out loud right now to Dr. Katz, just raise your hand.
I see Jim Z has a raised hand.
Aha. You'll find. How come they take the person who's got his hand up out of order? Okay, there we go. Unmute. All right, go, Jim.
Hi, you can hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering now, for these addictive behaviors, are you a person or some programs that help free people from these addictive behaviors? Because I haven't heard anything about that yet. I don't know if you cover that or what.
Well, if there are programs,
Yeah, the
see, here's the
free
problem. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. And here's one of the reasons I'm doing this presentation is we got some legal issues here. So, for instance, as a licensed practitioner in the state of Colorado, some of these things I have to report or I could lose my license. And I made my peace with that a long time ago, that whether or not I agreed with reporting it, if the law states, and that would be the Department of Regulatory Agencies, which is the office that issues my license. The law
Well, they
states
don't have
that,
to
but
do that, you know. They
hello?
don't. I mean, understand they shouldn't talk about that. They're thinking of abusing people, or they have. There are guidelines to not to be talking about that. I understand that completely. But there are Sexaholics Anonymous. I've one time went there where they're talking about it and
Yeah,
whether that helps
but
or not.
hold on, Jim. Sexaholics Anonymous is not guided by the Department of Regulatory Agencies. That's self-help. So there are plenty of self-help groups in there. You can talk about anything you want. You can't come into me as a licensed clinician seeking help and tell me that you're viewing child porn. I have to report that. But I will tell people that up front. Don't tell me something that I have to report. You could talk around it. But if you tell me you've done it, go ahead.
So you don't necessarily talk about anything that would free a person from these addictive behaviors. So it's
Well,
just that you.
that's what I'm getting to here. That's the whole
Okay.
point of this slideshow is that there aren't enough programs out there because the American Psychiatric Association does not allow for sexual behaviors to be listed as an addiction. If they did, we, the practitioners, might be able to actually work with somebody without risking our licenses. So let me complete this. I got two slides, and then I'll wrap up and we can get further into what you're asking, because that's what this is all about. That's why I do this presentation, to make it clear that the rest of the world is looking at this thing as we got to treat folks. We can't just let them, hang in the breeze. Because there are no treatments in the US, not officially anyway. So I mentioned earlier paraphilias, but what I showed you were seven categories of paraphilias. There are actually over 500 different paraphilias. Let that sink in. Okay. And I'm not saying there's only
And
500.
none of these are considered addictions that you could treat.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. But they are listed as paraphilias. Okay, so for instance, sexual pleasure from pain. The desire to have a healthy appendage amputated, sexual attraction to asphyxia. Now, some people find that very arousing, but some people are sadistic about it, and it can be really dangerous. Sexual pleasure from committing rape. I'm not saying somebody's supposed to get away with rape because they have a mental health disorder, but the point of fact is, what if they got treatment for it? What if they got treatment for it and were able to calm the urge?
Yeah, I've
How they
thought for
can.
a long time the idea that nobody who's doing something that's illegal can talk to their therapist about it. Like, that doesn't even make sense to have mandated reporters where you just
Correct.
come to, and sometimes we have we know of situations where someone went to their therapist saying, not I was touching my niece, but I'm having unwanted thoughts about my niece. Can you help me? I don't want to do anything. I haven't done anything illegal. And they put him in civil commitment for the rest of their life.
Yeah, that's wrong. If somebody came to me and said, I'm having thoughts about my niece, I haven't touched her, I haven't done anything, but I can't stop thinking about her, that's not reportable. I don't have to report that.
You
Once
don't
he
have to report
says,
it, but a couple people have reported it and ended up.
yes. Unfortunately, there are people in my profession who, whatever, it's either, their religious beliefs, conservative beliefs, or they feel that It's somebody else's problem. They're not going to deal with it. I don't know. I'm not clear about that. I follow the letter of what DORA requires. And if somebody says they're thinking about it, that's that we're not thought police. So I'm not going to report somebody telling me they're thinking that they have urges, you know, they're considering it. But if they cross that line, and I let people know that when they come to me and they say, I'm looking for counseling, I'll say, what are you looking for? And they start giving me a general idea. And very often I will say, look, I just have to let you know there are certain things I must report by law. And like I said, I made my peace with that. I don't agree with all of these things, but I'm not going to lose my license over it. I'm just not going to do it. I don't think it serves anybody for me to lose my license because I stepped over a line that I signed up for. That's just the way it is. Not all states have the same regulations as Colorado, but almost all of them have certain laws against child pornography, sex with underage people, and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, but if somebody tells me they're having these thoughts, and you know, they don't know how long they can hold it in, et cetera, I will help them as much as I possibly can. I'm an addictions counselor, so why wouldn't I? You know, I have no fear when it comes to that. So I think we're just about at the end here, and I can get further into what we were just talking about. So look at that. I just showed you, oops, two pages. Look at all these, everything with a red dot. You see the red dots here along the sides of the list? Every single one of those, lust murder, sexual arousal of people who have committed crimes. And there's plenty of those. Prison widows, they're called. Hematophilia, sexual attraction to involving blood. Oh, that's not dangerous at all, right? All right, that's the last slide. I'm going to stop sharing here. So, my main intention for doing this presentation, I've done this several places, including the National Association of Addiction Counselors, because I believe this should be in the book. And addiction counselors should be out there clamoring for it to be in the book. You know, it's a big missing. It's like somebody ripped a page out of the book, but the page was never there in the first place. There are some people who need help in their thoughts and behaviors. I see a note there, John. I'm not going to go back and look in the chats, the chats that you all left to one another. But if anybody has any questions, wants to speak out, you could do it anonymously, I believe, because well, most of your last names are just initials. You can also
Yeah, I would love
contact.
it if people who put a question in the chat just raised their hand and asked him to talk about it. I know why people type in the chat when they think of their question. They don't want to interrupt you right now, but they want to not forget their question. But I would love to ask that anybody who put something in the chat, now that he's done sharing, raise your hand and ask and let him answer your question in real time.
Can you see this slide here with a link?
It's just a link, yeah.
Yes.
And I
I'll
think
copy
I
that.
put that, yeah, I put it in the chat already,
Oh, thanks.
7:23 or your 6:23. I put it in the chat because when you talked about having done this article, I wanted to remember it later, so I went and found it.
Yes, so there's an article. It's in Behavioral Health News, has a bunch of references too, and you can share this with people who may be able to help move the needle in terms of changing the laws. It's going to have to be a change of the law. Right now, that's the only way we can do it. It's not up to the APA. It's up to the lawmakers. John S., I see your hand is raised.
All right, go, John.
Okay. Dr. Katz,
Yes.
I did put some things in the chat. So if you want me to bring them up, okay, here we go. It strikes me that a lot of people in this country, and you were talking about that sort of double standard, that conundrum of every of all of that, and you even touch on the very low age of consent, you know, child marriages and so on. But it strikes me that there are a lot of people in this country who cannot and will not come to terms with the fact that there are people under the age of 18 who are sexually active and who could fall into those paraphilic categories that you've been talking about. So one of the questions I've got in there is, has anyone else ever done in this country, ever done any studies that in any way would accurately relate or indicate the numbers of such minors say starting around the age of 13, okay, who are compulsively searching out these materials, and those who are definitely indulging in these behaviors. There were a couple of childhood friends that I knew from some years ago, and one, once he hit puberty, was very, very sexually active, even sexually voracious, and yet his family did very, very little about it. So I'd appreciate your thoughts on why we haven't come to terms with this, and just how glaring a hole, how glaring an error this is.
While the laws concerning sexuality in the US are very often not based on any kind of reality.
No.
Yeah, that's first and foremost. We have something like Megan's Law. Now, Megan's Law came out of a horribly, terribly tragic crime. No question about it. It's heart-rending. But the result, instead of actually mobilizing kind of community mental health efforts, which is, I believe, what's needed, we created this terribly pernicious chain of events which led to the registry. So that's one thing. The other is that people have an unrealistic version or vision of what people are actually doing out there, because people start, when they're in puberty, they're teenagers, they're young teenagers, but puberty is puberty. No matter what kind of laws you create, it's not going to stop puberty. So we don't have a realistic understanding of the young people's behaviors. So that's another. The other I want to put on the table, which may sound funny, but it's not at all, is SVU, which has been on the air for some 40 years and has had an outsized impact on the public's view of what are considered sexually based crimes. And first of all, the show pretty much the same 12 or 13 stories over and over and over. That's number one. And number two, they have done more damage to the understanding of who's doing what out there than anything. So a lot of people get their notions from there. Let me add, and we can go a long distance into this discussion. Once upon a time, one Supreme Court justice during deliberations stated that people convicted of sexually based offenses have an 80% recidivism rate. That number
That's
came out of
bullshit.
whole cloth. There's nothing remotely resembling that. And that the Federer, who's one of the primary researchers, he's from Canada, and other researchers have said that maybe we're talking about a 16 to 18% recidivism rate. Okay. However, people who commit assault, who beat up people, they have a 40 to 60% recidivism rate. Where's the registry for those folks? Never heard of it. So somebody here has a 7%. Is that a state number or is that a national number? Larry, I'd just be curious about that, where you got that number from. But that said, we have a, I think we have recidivism rate. Yeah. We have a culture. I mean, it's weird. First of all, it's a hypocritical culture. No two ways about that. Because people are behaving in ways that they would never admit to their neighbor. That's number one. And yet they're going to shake their finger at somebody else who might be behaving exactly the same way. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. I'm gonna do some research on that after I get off of here. But we have this strange, kind of weird throwback to Puritan Christianity, which is feathers get ruffled by almost anything with a stray glance, let alone sexuality, open sexuality. Not to mention, and we're not even going to touch here very much on what is being done to the LGBTQIA population, which is essentially vilifying a whole, millions and millions of human beings. And I'm certainly with Lady Gaga when she sings about born this way. So we can have a discussion about that. So we have a confluence of these different influences that come in to create the law. Who's sitting in the state houses across the country? And you got, think of all the red states, think about all the conservative states that they feel they need to uphold this kind of Puritanized Christianity, which is, don't even get me started there. And And that drives a lot of our national laws as well. So a lot of the laws that you see, a lot of pernicious laws, are the same laws everywhere. It's a little different from place to place. But so my case for why I did this presentation here and why I do this presentation out there is that as a practitioner, I want the freedom to be able to treat somebody who's coming to me and said, yeah, I've done some things, and that it's up to me whether I think they need to be reported or not, up to the law telling me I have to report. Because like I said, I'm not going to risk my license. I made my peace with that. I don't like it, but that's the way it is. I'm not going to lose my license for not reporting something that Dora says I have to report. So that's on my disclosure form. Anybody who works with me, they're going to sign off on that. And I just said, hopefully let's change the laws. I've spoke before the General Assembly 4 times so far, and I'll continue to do so. And I work with the Public Defender's Office, and I've done a bunch of lectures to the SOMB as well. So I'll talk to whoever I can talk to, but I'm not gonna lose my license reporting. Yes, John. John S. So your hand
He's
is
up. Yeah.
raised.
You reminded me of something that I read within the last couple of days. I forget if it was the Vera Institute of Justice or the Brennan Center, but there was a mention, and it was going into more detail about what would be called the prison industry or prison industrial complex. Compared to what you've been talking about, this, of course, the money that can be made from incarceration and so on. Do you see that as just as bad a factor getting in the way
Yes.
of reform as what you've just been talking about?
Yes, absolutely. And that's not with just sexually based offenses either. Especially youth who have, gotten caught up in gangs or even violence. We have a chance to turn a person around if we give them the kind of treatment and attention and care that would be required for somebody, rather than just throwing them into the system. And there are whole cultures out here, urban cultures, and I've worked with young people. I used to work in group homes with youth at risk. I worked in 3 different group homes, and at least one of them, these guys wanted they called their nickel bit. They wanted their nickel bit that first 5 year stretch, so they can get the right tattoos and walk like a big man when they get out. It's just a whole cultural thing that really needs to be addressed. Absolutely, for sure. So, thank you, Jim. Thank you for sharing that. I walk with you there. Absolutely. I check in. I'm not going to talk about my faith very much here, but my faith very much is part of what I do. I'm here to help people. I'm not here to make it worse. A lot of people come to me are clearly troubled. I mean, they're troubled in themselves, not they're troubled because somebody else is going to think that they're bad people. They're troubled because they're looking inside themselves going, I can't help it. I'm compelled. I don't know what I'm doing here. I can't, after a hard day, I'm going to drink a bottle and I'm going to watch porn. And now they can tell me, by the way, as a mandated reporter, they can tell me they're watching porn. They tell me they're watching kiddie porn, that's another story. But I let them know that ahead of time. I didn't know that up front. So I didn't see that last comment about Arkansas, but in any case. Yeah, my whole effort here, why I would do this presentation, why I would go out there and do it, is that I want the DSM changed. We need, and it's not just addictive sexual behavior. There's a whole bunch of behaviors out there that are problematic. Why isn't shopaholic? Why isn't that in there? There are people who can't stop buying, especially with the advent of Amazon. They're just on there every day looking for bargains and buying something. The only process addiction we have in the DSM is gambling. I'm not saying it shouldn't be in there, but that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. All kinds of
For how
process addiction.
long, for how many years has this mandated reporter thing been true across the country?
I'm not sure, but it was there when I started, when I became a counselor in 2010. So I didn't know much about it beforehand.
That just seems so crazy to me that people who need help can't go get help. I've had a number of speakers on here talking about, what is it like to be a person who, for example, is attracted to minors, and your whole life, everywhere you go, you know that people hate you and think you're terrible. You can't talk to your therapist about it. It's not safe to really mention it to anyone. So they spend their whole lives just feeling yucky because They're the most hated, that's the most hated thing in the country, and that's not good for you to just wander around all day having
No,
it
it's true.
a problem that you can't fix
Yeah, it's
and
true.
no one to help you.
People, if somebody came to me and told me they were attracted to minors, that's not reportable. So I'm going to have
That's
to report
fine.
them. That is not reportable. I do not have to report them if they tell me that they're attracted to minors. If they say they touched a minor, or they're going out with a minor, or they did something with a minor, or had the minor do something with them, then I have to report it. So yeah, let me weigh in on the registry, by the way. The registry is pernicious, period. It helps nobody, does no good for anybody. It is part of the prison industrial complex. That's all it is. It's not, there's no rational basis for the registry. It literally arose out of one heinous crime. That's it. That's the story. It took the country by storm. It was one of those news stories that just wouldn't quit. And next thing you know, there's a registry. And it's all it does is ruin lives and families. That's all it does. I think probably anybody showing up on this call is aware of some of that. And there's no basis for it at all. I have a doctorate in criminal justice management, okay, on top of everything else. I look at these things scientifically with evidence based. When we're talking about evidence based, that's things you can prove. How do the numbers add up? There's zero purpose for a registry other than somebody's making money off of it and it's a way to control the population. That's it. Fines and prisons can't work if they don't have enough prisoners, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's the way a lot of the laws work. But there is
Well, and not
zero.
only that, we incarcerate 10 times more people than any other country. And for each one of those prisons, not only are we damaging everyone we put in that prison, we're also damaging all the people who work in that prison and all the people who have families in that prison. So the damage is not just the poor guy who gets sent to jail, but his family, his friends, his the guys who I can't think of what you call it, the guys that work in the jails. Yeah, it's just ruining lives.
So, correctional officers have a higher suicide rate than frontline police officers. What do you think about it?
Well,
And
plus add to that the fact that here in this country, incarceration is a first resort, whereas in so many other countries, it is an absolute last resort.
right. And another one of the presentations I do is bringing in evidence-based practices in the treatment of people convicted of sexually based offenses. That's what my dissertation was about, is that whatever they're doing out there is not evidence-based. So I keep seeing John Walsh being mentioned. I'm not sure what the issue is about John Walsh, but anyway, because he lost a son to a predator, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. That's all I know about John Walsh.
Well,
But
John Walsh is the guy who basically is the grandfather of the modern registry. He's, John Walsh, Adam Walsh's dad, the guy from what do you call that show he was on for years? America's Most Wanted, that guy.
We the public have been sold a myth, a bill of goods that has no basis in fact. It's not that there aren't bad people out there, there are terrible people out there. There are people there that I'm okay if you lock them up, throw away the key, and they never see the light of day again. No question about it. But the way that sex crimes are dealt with is like a whole world of its own. It's not rational. There's no basis for the kinds of rules and regulations and laws. And again, I just don't understand, why do we not have a registry of violent offenders? We're gonna have a registry. The recidivism rate of violent offenders is quite high. People who beat up people tend to keep beating up people. But see, Larry, I see what you're saying in there is that in a sense, yeah, everybody's put in the same bucket of crimes, but not really. People convicted of sex crimes, even relatively minor sex crimes, they're put in a whole other loop. It just doesn't make sense. There's no rationality to it. There's nothing to back it up. And again, I'm talking not only as a practitioner who wants to see people with a disorder who know they have a disorder can come and get help without being turned in. That's what I want to see, in terms of myself as a oh, thank you, Larry. Appreciate that. But it makes no sense at all. There's no rational reason behind it. It's all emotional, knee-jerk, reactive, and it was driven by the media.
Yeah,
And
and I agree that people who spend their days watching SVU, every time you see something, it gets kind of re-put in your brain, like another, if you watch news footage about a crime, it's making your brain think it's extra dangerous. The more you talk about it in your brain, the more you see it, the more dangerous you think it is. And yeah, the combination of all these SVU kind of crime, SVU shows, it just makes people think that that's happening everywhere all the time, and it isn't.
that is true. That is true. So I just want to be clear. I think I repeated a bunch of times, but one of the reasons I do this presentation is the American Psychiatric Association has to get off their butts and accept that we have a problem here. And the problem is that people who may want to seek help can't. Why would they when they're going to risk getting arrested? Okay. I'm working with a guy now. He called me the day after he was busted. He called me. And he had been drifting into this malaise for a long time. And when and that's where I found out about the torrent, by the way. I had no idea that this was out there. And it's like, I mean, it almost sounds like espionage, to have something like that out there, but it's just for people looking at child porn. This whole thing was created by the Department of Justice. And that's how he was caught. But he would have sought or I see somebody asking about lobbying your lawmakers. That often works with a group effort. So, and I think an organization like this, you have probably the power to reach people across the aisle and in different jurisdictions. But the idea is to target particular laws, but you have to find out that the laws are coming up. That's where you have an impact. When I spoke before the General Assembly, it was because certain rules and regulations were coming. And I found out about it. I was actually notified by the Public Defender's Office. So I have a an ally there, connection in there, who also thinks the registry is just absurd, well, as they should and as they would. And there are organizations out there. I will tell you that in my research, I saw that the Women of the UN, I believe they have a website, and that's what it's called. Women of the UN are very, very effective in creating grassroots activity in getting either policies changed or getting new programs to come along and help people. And the reason why I mention this is because their methodology is very successful. That it may be different issues, it may be about clean water somewhere, maybe about homeless issues somewhere else. Poverty, food, but their methods of getting people together is highly su successful, and that's why anybody who's interested in activism should take a look at the Women of the UN. They have a website. I did some research on them, doing some of my criminal justice research. There's other stuff like that of like on the community level, sometimes on the precinct, on the municipal level, getting changes made, and hopefully you get somebody in there who isn't just a kind of about policy, but who really knows the science. Get somebody with a science mind who knows what the facts are, knows how to separate the facts from the myths and the legends and all that kind of stuff. And get somebody in there who also understands the process, because it takes place in the legislature. That's where it's going to change. It's not going to change in the police department. It's not going to change in the prison system, which is increasingly run by business. And they want to make money. So they need prisoners to make money. That's what they're going to do. So it's going to happen at the county legislature, because that's where your sheriff's department is, it's county. And it's going to happen in the state legislature. That's where you're going to make the
Well,
change.
I was, when I think about this and I think about what is our way out of this, it's hard for me to imagine any legislator raising their hand and saying, "Oh, I think the registry is a bad idea and I want to get rid of it," because, quite the opposite. They tend to get elected on, "I'm going to be tougher. I'm going to be tougher than the last guy." So, when I talk about this, I think that the answer is educating regular people to go talk to their legislator and say, because until you personally are affected or somebody you know is affected, you just assume that everything you've been reading all these years and hearing all these years is true. Oh, how come it says ask to unmute? You have to unmute yourself, I guess, Larry. I don't know why.
Larry, you got something to say? So your hand is raised.
Larry's trying to figure out how to unmute.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
There
Okay. Great.
go ahead.
Yeah, I guess Ann had to give me permission. It is grassroots helps, and so does you made a good point, Dr. Katz, about county, because the sheriffs are the one that maintain most of the registry. And in my county, it's right next door to Maricopa, which is Phoenix, Arizona. My county, every year I wrote to the legislator and told them that they must change the name of the sex offender registry. Maricopa County still calls it that, but after about 10 years, I finally, they never wrote back or anything, and I never went to any meetings. But now, when you go to register, it's called the Offender Watch. They removed the word sex, and they've just offender, because, you know, I was very persistent about telling how that doesn't help the person who is a level one or level two on that registry and pretty much, you know, is on probation and the lowest recidivist rate, and they can't get anywhere. I have to explain to my neighbors, you know, that I had a 16-year-old girl stalking me, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, and they accept me. But if I'm on the registry and I don't go talk to the neighbor before they get moved in or whatever, then, you know, and they see it on there, forget it. You can't recover from that.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know, the registry is a nationwide monster, unfortunately. But lawmaking can happen on the county and state level. And the more, because the individual, so for instance, the disclosure regulations, that's going to be on a state by state level. There's not a national law about what counselors can cannot say or accept, you know, people telling them. So so in terms of my profession as a counselor, you know, like I said, I made my peace a long time ago with that's the rules, I'm going to follow those rules because I want to do what I do. And I just give somebody a heads up. And sometimes we just kind of talk around it, kind of, so that they're not telling me anything that I have to repeat in court, something like that.
Right.
So, but in terms of changing the law, first of all, I think right now, the way things are, Congress is probably a no-go. So nothing's going to happen. So that's first. But on the state and county levels, things can be done. And part of it is it's not writing letters. It's not a letter writing campaign. It's actually talking, going to them when they have a town meeting, when they go, you know, to the local courthouse or whatever, and they're going to have a town meeting, that you show up, usually a group, even 3, 4, 5 people who are talking about a certain thing may help to persuade the lawmaker to start thinking more about X, Y, and Z. And especially if you can give them material, you know, even printed material, people still read it. Of here's what the actual numbers are, because one of the problems with this whole malaise is the numbers are off. You know, people don't know what the numbers are. The public doesn't know what the numbers are, and they don't care about finding out. You know, they just take what they've been told. And the dreaded term sex offender. You know, there's all this myth about what a sex offender means. All sex offenders are sex offenders. It's like, oh, wait a second. Yeah, you know, there are people that I can guarantee that everybody here would want to see the streets.
Have you heard yet about the National Coalition Against Conviction Registries? It's about a year old coalition of all the organizations. Well, not all, but most of the organizations who are fighting the registry. I'm putting a link to it in the chat.
Called NCAR?
It's called NCACR, National Coalition Against Conviction Registries. And one of the things we have on this website is a place where you can ask for a call to action and get us all to agree to do it. So if you, Dr. Katz, were to, you know, get together like a campaign that you would like a bunch of people to all reach out at the same time to, say, the American what do you call it, the APA?
American Psychiatric Association, yes.
American Psychiatric. So if you were to maybe come up with a campaign like, hey, let's all at the same time write to the APA and say, here's all the facts and all the reasons why this is dumb and all the other countries that are doing it and all the reasons that our method is dumb. If you click on this link and then go to the call to action section, basically there's a little subcommittee of NCACR who decides if it's a doable thing. And then if they agree, yes, we should all be doing this, then they'll send it out to all of those organizations. It's basically a way to get a hold of all of us at once. So that WAR and Axol and NARSOL and all the different organizations could do it together. And I think this is a great thing that I think you could get all of us behind. You know, link enough of your research and your articles and all the stuff you know about the rest of the world and how the rest of the world is doing it, and just the stats on how many people in our country are affected by this, by pornography addictions. You know, that would be a way to get us all on board at the same time to doing this. It'd be a way to kind of get this idea out, because this seems like a very impactful thing. You know, I know that lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people are watching way too much porn. And even if they're not watching kiddie porn, even if they're not getting arrested, it's still bad for them. And it's not good for, you know, their mental health. It's not good. It's not good for anyone to be using that much porn. And so, I think that'd be a nice way to do that going forward. Okay, I want to be respectful of everybody's time. Now, Dr. Katz, I think you told me you had a second presentation that you're kind of developing. Is that my imagination? Or maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was somebody recently said I have two different. Oh, you know what? It was Travel Guy. It was Bruce Borchers. He has two presentations. He's got one on my books, and he's waiting to do another one in the future. So that's probably what I was thinking of.
I have a few others we could talk about, because I just for the Colorado School of Family Therapy, I teach the sex therapy courses for certification. And so I've been developing a bunch of programs for that.
Okay. So, well, when you get another one ready to go, we'd love to have you. And okay. I love talking to smart people who know stuff about things that we care about.
Wise guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good luck. I really want to thank you for your time. And I want to thank all.
I did take that link, and I'm going to take a look at that organization too.
Yeah. And so I'm going to tell everybody how to save the chat, because there's some stuff in this chat that you might want to see. So if you go into the chat and click on the three little dots at the top, it'll say save chat. And then after you leave the thing, you'll have the link to Dr. Katz's article. You'll have the link to that Brooke Shields documentary. You'll have the link to the Restorative Action Alliance. Basically all this stuff, if you want to be able to look at this stuff later. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And
anytime.
Bye, everybody.
My pleasure. Have a good night, everybody.